This podcast is recorded on stolen and unceded Aboriginal land.
We acknowledge the First Nations and elders of this country and join their calls for justice.
Hey everyone, it's Tom Ballard here, 50% of Serious Danger. Time for another wonderful episode. This week, something a little bit different and special, we are bringing you the live app that we put on at the Greens National Conference 2022. Live at Solidarity Hall in Trades Hall, Melbourne, in front of a very enthusiastic Greens-based audience who spent the weekend touching themselves inappropriately because we'd done so well at the goddamn election and the movement is growing and it's good times. Obviously, Emerald's still away. We love and miss her. You'll hear a little message from her from me in the past in this episode. And you'll hear me chatting to two very cool people from across the political party that is the Greens about their perspectives on the conference and the election and politics in general, you know, all the good shit that we talk about on this show. A little bit of housekeeping. I want to let you know that we have another Patreon ep out. You might have seen it already pop up in your feed. A discussion that Emerald and I recorded before she went away, chatting about lots of spicy internal things when it comes to the Greens Party. What are the four pillars that the party is based on? Do we need all four of them? Should we have factions? Are we an anti-capitalist party? How do we become a mass party? Plus lots of swearing. I think we called Peter Dutton a cunt at one point. a general hilarious conversation. If you miss Emerald as I do, you want to hear her voice and you want to hear our insights into that kind of stuff, please sign up to become a patron of Serious Danger. Go to patreon.com/SeriousDangerAU. We need your help. If you've ever thought about it, considered it, we really need to build up a strong Patreon base to become sustainable as a show, to pay our wonderful producer, Michael the Griff Griffin, and keep bringing you spicy, hot, Greens-based left-wing political content. Patreon.com/SeriousDangerAU. Even if you can spare as little as $3 a month, all of that helps us make the show possible. Fuck you. This is a free episode, so I don't have to speak well. Please support us if you can. We'd appreciate it. And enjoy this episode, the first ever live edition of Serious Danger at Greens National Conference. Hit it.
Talk about the Greens. That bunny, that bunch of idiots.
If you want the dole for life, free marijuana, vote Greens.
These people, these Greens, they are snake oil salesmen.
They're a bunch of breath bags and a bunch of idiots, and I've got no time for them whatsoever.
Frankly, I've always found the Greens to be a real serious danger to Australia.
Serious danger to Australia.
Welcome to Serious Danger, a podcast about green politics in Australia, live from the Greens National Conference 2022! Oh my god, there's 4 million people here, it's insane! We win! Oh, everyone's hungover, we want to get this fucking done. But here we go, we're hungover, we need to have more alcohol. This has been amazing, this is my first ever Greens National Conference. Amazing. It's been an amazing weekend. I'll be honest, not as many drug-fueled orgies as I was expecting. I thought we'd be green, smoking weed, doing MDMA, listening to Ben Lee, and really getting into polyamory. But it's mainly just been PowerPoint and vegan curries. But it's been great. It's been an amazing vibe because I don't know if you heard, we just won the recent election. Green slide, motherfuckers. Emerald's not here, I'm allowed to say it. Green slide. The whole conference has pretty much been people up on the stage laughing and smiling. There haven't been orgies, but we've all been touching ourselves inappropriately, as so we should. We've earned that goddamn right, people. This podcast is made possible with the help of the Green Institute and produced by Michael Griffin. It is not an official Greens Party podcast. We are not a propaganda machine. The fact that we're here at the National Conference is a pure coincidence. It was a weird double booking, okay? My name is Tom Ballard. I'm a Greens member from Maribyrnong Branch. I'm a comedian. You can follow me on Twitter, at PRGuy17. And only in this room would that joke kill. My co-host for this show is the wonderful comrade Emerald Moon, who I love very much. She's from the great state of Greensland. Unfortunately, she cannot be here. She's taking a very well-earned break post-election in the Philippines, hanging out with George Christensen. And
she has sent through a message, though. She loves you all. She sent a message. Comrades, it is a testament to how exciting our party is right now that as I sit in a beautiful bamboo and Nipa hut on the edge of Lobok River in Bohol, Philippines, I still have FOMO for national conference? Question mark? The impression I get is that these are normally shit. Is that the general vibe? This has been the good one? Okay, great. Now, as a good faith measure, in the spirit of consensus and being conscious of time, I just want to name my absence and send my love and support. I'm sorry you have to deal with Tom as he does that weird, high-pitched comedian thing alone. I wish I was there to stop him. Love and solidarity, Emerald. Emerald Mood, everybody. What an asshole. We miss you, Emerald Moon, very much. Fortunately, I'm going to stop doing my high-pitched comedian thing, and I'm going to be joined by two awesome guests to have a chat about all the goss from National Conference this year, reflect on the election, and talk about what is up next. But before we do that, I just want to give a little bit of background for folks in the room who might not be familiar. Do people here listen to the podcast, Serious Danger? Thank you. Do people have no idea what the hell's going on right now? Yeah! Okay, you don't need to be proud of it, but thank you. Some of you confused, they're like, why is Fat Joel Creasy talking to us at the Greens National Conference? Well, Serious Danger is a weekly political podcast that Emerald and I started together about 6 months ago. We talk about what's happening in Australian politics from a green left perspective. We talk about what we believe in, what we're fighting for, why things suck, and how we can change them. We're obviously very partisan. We are Greens members. We want the Greens to do very, very well. But that's because of our politics. Our politics come first, and we view the Greens as the vehicle to enact that politics and to change the world for the better. We want our show to be a place for discussion and debate about the whole green left movement, and we want to grow and expand the whole world of lowercase g green politics to include everybody in this room, everyone in the party, every single one of those almost 2 million Australians who voted Greens at the last election and beyond. We believe this can be a mass party for everyone, and we want to fight to make that happen. We also don't take ourselves too seriously. We feel joy. And we swear a lot because we're fucking cool. Side note, I really loved Adam's speech yesterday, but there was a moment where he was just a head on a giant screen above a glowing green triangle telling us to feel joy. Little bit culty. What's that? No? Okay, I will not get heckled at the Greens conference. Serious Danger comes out on Sundays. We just released our 29th episode this morning with special guest co-host Ketan Joshi talking about the energy crisis and how Labor seriously believing that the climate wars are over because they got elected is very, very fucking stupid. And we've had heaps of guests join us from episode one with Senator Dorinda Cox. We've had Adam Bandt, Lydia Thorpe, Scott Ludlam, Celeste Little, Jordan Still John, all the Queensland Green comrades. In fact, all the newly elected lower house MPs were all guests on Serious Danger. Coincidence? Not for me to say. Greens MPs and candidates are very good to have on because they're human beings who know what a joke is. Yeah. I don't know if you saw Adam on the cheap seats this week. Fucking funny. Funny banter. Can you imagine Peter Dutton doing lighthearted chat? No, you can't because he's a demon from the netherworld. And it hasn't just been people from within the party as well. We've also been joined by the likes of Andrew Hansen from The Chaser, Joel Birch from The Amity Affliction, and Father Bob McGuire, who was delightful but loose. You don't need to retweet everything, Father Bob. Calm down. And look, I don't want to take too long here. I don't want to be too self-indulgent. But I honestly think over those past 29 apps, what we have built does seem to be pretty cool. We've received a huge amount of love and enthusiasm from listeners, initially from Greens nerds like all you people in this room, and then over time from a bit of a broader spectrum. We've heard from people who had been Greens members in the past and sort of lost a bit of faith and had come back. People have been Greens curious, from other leftists who had dismissed the Greens project and were now giving it another look. We've heard from people who told us that our show was the difference that inspired them to volunteer or campaign or become a member of this party. We've been told that people were out listening to our show as they were letterboxing or door knocking. People listened to stories from Emerald and Max about... Jesus Christ, Jotto. We'll talk to you in a moment. They've heard stories from Errol and Max about how transformative and addictive door knocking was, and that gave them the push to actually do that. And nothing has made us feel prouder or happier to hear those kind of stories. We've even had people prepared to give us money to make our show. We currently have over 200 Serious Danger patrons on Patreon, and that is amazing. We need more. SeriousDangerPod.com. You will not leave until you're signed up as a patron. But we volunteer our time, Errol and I, but we want to cover the wages for our wonderful producer, Michael, and just the hosting costs. So that is the dream, to get self-sustainable very, very soon. To give you an idea of the energy that is kicking around at our movement, 40 of those patrons signed up literally the day after the federal election. All right, like that's fucking there. We ask people to chip in like $3 a month. These people are giving $10 or $20 a month. It's pretty wild. And I think in our own small way, our show is an attempt to sort of help build an alternative, independent, leftist media because we simply have to. We can and we must make our own media and culture because the billionaire-owned, ruling-class Australian media is broken and it is no great friend to our movement. I think everybody in the Greens who's trying to get a fucking story up will be able to relate to that. Even the public broadcasters, all right? Lots of reasons to love the ABC and the SBS. One of them being they employ me sometimes, and I want to make it clear that I still support that. But let's be real. In a lot of their news coverage, even the ABC and the SBS are invested in the status quo, and they are not interested in changing the status quo, and they don't have the resources to seriously challenge the way this country works to the detriment of ordinary people. News resources regularly underestimate, misrepresent, or just ignore the Greens and the serious left. So we have to say, fuck them, let's do it ourselves. And the last thing I just want to say before we get to our guests is that making the show has sort of confirmed a long-held theory that I've had, which is this. The Greens are cool. Now, all right, settle down. I don't mean any traditional way of cool. No one in this room is cool, okay? We're all involved in politics. As Max Chalamet told us yesterday, that makes us freaks. Freaky freaks. I mean cool as in decent, right? Decent and good and real. It's fucking real, right? Are the Greens perfect? Yes, next question. No. No, the Greens aren't perfect. No political party is. The idea of searching for perfection in politics is probably a waste of time. But goddamn it, at least the Greens are real. The thing that keeps getting me inspired about the Greens, and particularly our MPs and everyone involved in this movement, is the fact that the Greens have for 30 years now been consistently anti-bullshit. They have consistently been against the torrent of bullshit that we are served up by our political and media classes every single day in this country. Trashing the environment in the ruthless pursuit of profit, that is bullshit. Demonizing and torturing refugees to keep us safe, that is bullshit. George W. Bush isn't a war criminal, that's bullshit. Giving tax cuts to the rich while people are starving, that is bullshit. Pumping up the housing market is more important than housing the homeless, that is bullshit. First Nation people don't deserve justice, that's fucking bullshit. The Labor Party is the only vehicle for progressive change in this country, that is bullshit. The Greens will never be able to win another lower house seat. That is bullshit. Fuck yeah. Our show is called Serious Danger. It comes from a quote that you might have heard in our theme song from Scott Morrison, in which he described the Greens as a real serious danger to Australia. Well, we're not a real serious danger to Australia, Scott, or to our fellow Australians. We're a real serious danger to you, Scotty, and everything that your broken bullshit politics represents. We are a serious danger to the status quo because we know what we believe. We know that the vast majority of people in this country want a better and progressive future as well, and we are going to fucking win it. We are willing to fight like hell for it by campaigning, by organizing, by door knocks, with podcasts, with strikes, by getting arrested, by getting elected, by winning, by delivering food and help and love to our fellow citizens' doors. And we're going to do it with joy and we're going to do it together. So watch out. Here we fucking come. All right. Are you ready to meet our first guest, everybody? All right. I'm stoked. Obviously, we all love our federal MPs and we'll be hearing from them a lot this weekend, and rightly so. We've got so many of them, which is awesome. We've had a bunch of MPs on the show. We want to have them in the future. My two guests today are not federal MPs, but they are awesome and got great perspectives on the party and the movement. So I'm really stoked that they agreed to join us. My first guest is 24 years old. She's a former co-convener of the Australian Young Greens. She was the youth organizer in New South Wales. Please give a very warm welcome to Elizabeth Thompson. Hi.
Hey.
Let's have a nice natural chat.
There's no one here.
It's just you and me. Is this your first conference as well?
It is. I joined just before lockdown, so...
Oh, shit. You joined in 2019 in the wake of like the sadness?
Yep, depression.
The depression and sadness, and you signed up. Right, and now here you are. What have you made of the conference thus far?
Things are less depressing now.
Yes.
I think that, yeah, like this is a space that we know it's not, politics is bullshit, but we know that it can't, that it shouldn't be.
Yes.
And we're addressing that. Yeah. When it's in our own party and in greater society, we are the ones who will call it out.
We're fighting back against it. Love that. All right, because people listening to this podcast aren't as in tune with all the machinations of the party as the people in this room necessarily, what is the Australian Young Greens? How does it work? Can you give us sort of an overview of the Young Greens faction? Faction? Section.
Faction.
Faction? No, we don't have factions.
Adam's not here, so...
the faceless men of the Australian Young Greens.
Yeah, we're coming for you, Adam. So the Young Greens formed about 10 years ago. I think I see one of the original Young Greens up there. Oh, August 2012.
Awesome.
But at the moment, it's like the Australian Greens. It's a federation of different Young Greens bodies across the state who come together and we'll just run a few activities throughout the year. We did a bit during lockdown, just like Zoom, reading groups, just having fun. But also a space for all the young people to come into the party that admittedly is still quite old if you come to a local group or branch meeting.
Sure.
And a space where we encourage each other to run for parliament, run for internal positions, get your voice heard, and do it while having fun.
Sounds good. And it's up to like age 30, right? Members of 30 and under? Or 35?
30 and under.
30, okay, right. So I'm not able to be part of them anymore.
Sorry.
Fucking
I think the Young Nats is under 35, so...
Okay. All right. That's all we have time for, Elizabeth. I will not be mocked. And you were a youth organiser for this past election, right, in New South Wales?
That's right.
Well, what did that involve?
So this is the first time New South Wales embarked on this youth campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with uni groups. Yep. When I started working with the uni groups in New South Wales, we had two. We're up to about seven now in different capacities.
Yep.
For those who go to uni in the city, it's obviously a very active campus.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't go to a uni in the city, it's very dead. So we've had challenges there, but we're going to keep improve ourselves the Greens do. And then we also did some Western Sydney organising. We ran a youth launch out in Western Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So just putting our money where it is and saying we want to do Western Sydney shit. So we did Western Sydney
shit. No, we're not allowed to go there. We're in the inner city only.
It's,
only
sorry,
rich
Labor.
People in the inner city are allowed to vote Greens. That's all we appeal to.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm just the mainstream media.
Well, if we make Western Sydney richer, they will...
redistribute
the wealth.
Genius. This might be a weird question, but just generally speaking, like, how does it feel to be a young Australian right now? Like, as I say, I'm 32. It's over for me. Oh God. Sorry, I got to go and make some calls. But how does it feel? Not just with the optimism of the election. Obviously, we got a lot of good news there. But I think broadly about the political status quo. What does it feel like to know you're going to be alive for ages?
Well, it's better now. election was still less than a month ago now.
Yes.
Still, like, it's recent. So I don't think anybody would have felt this way a month ago.
Yeah.
So that change is exciting. There's now space because the two-party system is on its last legs now.
Yeah.
I'm still not calling it, but I think it's coming. And I think the Greens and young people especially have a space and new avenues have opened up that weren't there before. Yeah, and those spaces are no longer white and old and male because we've just seen a whole bunch of old white male men lose their seats.
Hey, bit of respect, people. Come on, let's have a minute silence. Julian Simmons, peace. Shout out to a real one. What do you say when you talk to your friends who are similar age to you and they might not be politically engaged so much, or they know that you're involved with the Greens or whatever? What are the kind of conversations? Do you have friends outside the Greens?
Since this is public, yes.
Yes. We're all very well-rounded people. go on, sorry. What do people think?
Yeah, so my one friend...
God.
Yeah, so my friends, obviously, like, climate justice is more on the table.
Yep.
More than ever before. Like, First Nations justice, queer rights. Sorry, just articulate what's on the table. Because I've been on holiday since the election, so I haven't been talking to my friends.
Yeah, yeah. We should go to the Philippines. You know, some of us are still working.
On the movement.
But I suppose, I mean, like, yeah. When you talk to other young people who aren't as engaged, what is their impression of the Greens, I suppose? Do they view the Greens as a serious vehicle option that has some serious offers for a generation, for Zoomers and those to come?
Since I've gotten involved, I have gotten the Greens don't win.
Mm.
I think we will start to see a change in that because we win.
Yes.
yeah, like, I don't think Labor won the election. The Liberals lost badly. And Labor just happened to not do anything.
Really Stephen Bradbury their way in there, didn't they? I just want to spend a bit of time on this because it was pretty extraordinary. There was a story back in April that I think it must have been Greens New South Wales running 10 candidates under the age of 30. Across the country, there must have been way more than that. Like, I think I knew. Does that sort of sound vaguely right? It was this story is focused on Eli Davern, I think. Am I saying his name correctly?
Yeah.
Eli Davern. In the seat of Farah, that's Susan Lee's Susan Lee's seat. She was obviously returned. This guy was in year 12. He's 18. He's doing his HSC while campaigning. Yes. Applause for running. Applause for doubling the Greens vote in the course of that. You gotta, as I was saying, there must be way more candidates across the country that were under 30 that ran, and one of them won. Stephen Bates is 29 years old. Okay, so the idea that young people cannot be taken seriously as a candidate, I think there are lots of cases of young people running, putting their hands up because they're energised and enthusiastic, they know they're not going to win and probably aren't taken seriously as candidates. Hopefully, would you say this election is a bit of a game changer on that front?
I think especially with alternative media, like be it this podcast or social media, we just, young people are so articulate and they know their policy, and it's not like we need climate targets. They can articulate why. They can articulate why we need a tree there and not a tree there. Like, they know the details.
Yeah.
They are almost ready to be in the Senate hearings and budget estimates to be the ones grilling the Labor Party.
Yes.
We don't need training for it. The young people are there.
They're already there. And obviously the party has a great history with Sarah and Jordan and lots of other folks who put their hands up, which I think is very exciting. Also, the youth vote itself, okay? So under 45s made up about 43% of the electorate this election. Next election, there'll be 44%. I think the way that things are going to work, even though we have an aging population, like with population growth, that's sort of a growing part of the electorate, which is exciting. And people might have seen that a big part of the electoral success relates to the youth vote within respective seats. So Melbourne has the highest proportion of voters who are under 30, followed by Brisbane, Griffith and Ryan at number 5. We won all those. Just to recap.
Because others, we win.
We won.
Yeah.
High five. I didn't do that much. The other seats are up there. It was Canberra, the seat of Canberra. 23% of voters are under 30. We had a great candidate, Tim Holloway, running there, got 25% primary vote, which is exciting. The seat of Newcastle as well, which I did not hear much about at all. That's, I think, number 6 for the highest proportion. That's 22%. We had Charlotte McCabe there with a vote of 20% as well, which is exciting. I mean, do you think like these should be target seats for us, these ones where there are lots of young people that we can kind of get our hooks into?
Yeah, well, Cunningham and Newcastle is the other one in New South Wales that is now popped up for us.
Yep.
Those both have universities, so for those who don't know, Cunningham is Wollongong. But they're also mining towns and steel towns and, like, shipping towns that we ran the Just Transition platform hard.
Yeah.
And people responded to it because it cuts through that bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, as Greens politicians mention a lot, we know the other parties are lying to communities.
Yes.
And we come out with a plan that didn't lie.
Yes.
But young people definitely helped the election. I don't think it swung those seats because it's not like in the Young Greens we coordinated to move up to Brisbane. Mm. We're moving to Sydney next, by the way. But it was the young people who organised the campaigns.
What do you think the party can do to build that, right, to really seriously engage with
with young people. Obviously, there is a massive young Greens vote, and that is growing. That is fantastic. And, you know, there is a regular mission, I think, to convince young Labor voters that all the things that they love and they hope for are not going to be delivered by this two-party system, and they should send their vote elsewhere. What else can we do as a party to include young people within our internal structures and to boost our youth appeal across the board?
If you look at the 2019 stats of under 35, I think it was about 35-40% did vote Greens, like Labor a bit higher. But if you actually break that down to 18 to 24 and 24 to 35, there's about a 15% drop off from like 40 to 25%.
Right.
So we know that really young age group is really into Greens politics, and there's a big drop off. And I think that's because we aren't engaging young people. Mm. And where like the Greens are still not in every community in Australia. And I think if we can do more and give people spaces, we're going to close that gap. So when people get into politics and they see the whole wide range of possibilities and options, they'll go, oh, the Greens. But then in 5 years, they might not have ever met a Greens person. Mm. So like, why would I vote for the Greens? I haven't had my door knocked by the Greens. Mm. I haven't seen them at the community store. I just haven't seen them around. Yep. And we need to build that trust with young people, right. And just the community in general, because I still think we can do a lot better with older people.
Yeah, as well. Also, the housing crisis sucks, and the fact no one can afford a house is bad, but the more renters there are, the better for us. But that's not a plan. I'm just saying, if that's how the demographics go, where the major parties don't do anything about that, then, hopefully you expect to see an increase of, you know, frustrated renters who are turning to the only party that's actually taking that issue seriously.
Yeah, and if the Labor Party wanted to stop us, they should just give everyone a home because there'll be no renters.
Yay! Problem solved. Another thing I want to ask you about, Elizabeth, is like, trans rights, and reflecting on this election that we had that was, well, it was dog shit, let's be honest. You're a proud trans woman. Were you surprised at all by the level of the toxicity and the transphobia that we saw play out over the election campaign?
No.
Nope.
Yep. Like every election someone's used in this capacity, obviously in 2001 would be the best example of refugees being mm-hmm. used in that capacity. I don't know if I knew it would be trans people this election, but it didn't surprise me as it rolled out.
I mean, this is really bubbling up into the culture war now, right? Like this yes, after all the horrific demonization and the toxicity of the same-sex marriage debate, we've moved through that as a society, I suppose, with plenty of scars to show for it. But now you are seeing gender being front and foremost of the rights war on culture and culture wars across the board. It feels hard to imagine that this is going away anytime soon. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, like they will. The right are dumb. Like they're fuckwits and they're dumb. Like they're not
exclusive. Exclusive insight at the Greens National Conference. Just watch the language, all right, Elizabeth? I'm sorry I interrupted because I'm desperate.
So they will keep doing it, but I think this election shows it doesn't work.
Yeah.
The majority of Australia are not transphobic or TERFs or terrible people.
Yes.
They just want to put food on the table.
Right.
And sometimes the Liberals, they just think the Liberals will do that.
Yeah.
Obviously we know otherwise. but we need to sell that message and communicate that we want a better future for everyone, and that, like, as someone who's also who grew up in Western Sydney, I go to Western Sydney a lot as a trans woman, and I don't get harassed.
Yeah,
almost as if because I leave other people alone, and they leave me alone, and I treat people like how I want to be treated, and it's such a simple thing that you would think should be reflected in our politics.
Yes,
but isn't.
Now, here's the sticky thing, right? I heard from some people, particularly from the Labor side of things, that said engaging with the Catherine Deves conversation and engaging and walking into that culture war discussion, to them, they would argue that this was something of a trap, okay? That being drawn into those kind of conversations, that culture war stuff, stops you talking about things like putting food on the table and some basic economic meat and potato issues, or so to speak. Now, I want to stand in solidarity with trans rights. I think that Adam's response at the National Press Club when he said that these rights are non-negotiable and he stood up for them and he pointed out how toxic the same-sex marriage debate was and he refuses to repeat that again was fantastic, and that was great. But I suppose, what are your thoughts about not playing the rights dumb games on these kind of issues while still obviously standing up for what we believe in?
Yeah, like we should be talking about it, because if we ignore it, it's validating it. And we will just let it grow because nobody's pushing against it. Obviously, I think for those who've looked into how fascism grows, that's also a big way it has grown in several countries in the past, most notably, obviously, Nazi Germany, that it really wasn't challenged. And, yeah, we need to be challenging those ideas because those ideas unchallenged do hurt communities, not just trans people, but trans allies and friends and family.
I mean, one of the most surreal moments of the campaign, I don't know if people remember it, sorry to bum me right out, but during the Nine debate, I think, this seriously questioned, like, these men were asked to define what means a woman, what a woman means, right? With no acknowledgement of the toxic culture war that relates to, and both those men answered the question in a very, like, flippant way without acknowledging or standing up for trans people, one of the most marginalised communities in our country. And I have to say, if Adam Bandt was at that fucking debate, that would not would have been what happened. And we need to get, as the major party system breaks down, we need to get Greens on those debates, I reckon. That's what I think. And as a bit of an up, I saw that you tweeted this, okay? Now, you tweeted out the total number of votes that Captain Dave got, 30,797 in the seat of Warringah. You added up all the votes for trans and non-binary candidates, 56,899. One Animal Justice Party candidate, one independent candidate, and five from the Greens, baby.
And that's just lower house. I think there's at least three more in the upper house that we ran.
Yes. Okay, right. That was in total. You also pointed out that, like, adding them up doesn't, like, mean a lot, but it made us feel good.
It does.
And that is great. And as I say, I've heard you talk really eloquently about this. Yes. We cannot succumb to that idea that most people in this country, ordinary and particularly working class people, are somehow bigoted or socially backward or cannot comprehend the idea of changing social realities and aren't willing to stand in solidarity with people of all races, all orientations, and all gender identities. We cannot see that idea of the big beating progressive heart in this country, as Adam puts it.
Yeah, like when it comes to racism, we often see that the excuse that that people of color are racist, and that's almost as a reason, like in the refugee space, not to let them into the country.
Right.
I had been around people, and they're like, "Oh, the Greens, I don't get their fucking deal. Like, they want to let Muslims into the country, but also Muslims are homophobic."
Right.
So, like, I'm like, Muslims are not homophobic.
No.
Well, at least not inherently.
No, maybe they're people.
Like, yeah, they're like, they probably know gay people.
Yes.
In their community, surprise.
Yeah.
And they only say that to try and win an argument.
Yes.
They don't ever want to be genuine. Like, there are queer activists who are people of colour, and not in only Australia but in other countries where they do face prosecution.
Yes.
So what are we doing for them when you bring that up?
Yeah.
You're probably doing nothing.
You just want to win a fight on Twitter. It'd have been so lovely to meet you. Thank you for being here. Elizabeth Thompson, everybody. Give it up. Please stay if you like, or you whatever. My next guest is a champion. He knocked over his bottle before. He's the Greens Councillor for the Gabba Ward in the great city of Brisbane in the state of Greensland. He's been there since 2016. He's a fashion icon. Jonathan Tree, everybody. How you doing, man?
My voice is tired. I was up real late last night chatting. And so, yeah, bit croaky, but I'm good. It's been an interesting week, meeting lots of cool people, reconnecting with old friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're at Trades Hall at the moment, and I'm a little bit outraged because I heard about the quilt room, and that's one of the places where the means are, and there's no quilts in there. It's like, what? Anyway, that's not Greens related.
No,
that's what I was just thinking about.
No, like, these are important issues that we need to explore as a party.
I'm always looking for, you know, coming down from Queensland, it's freaking cold down here. I'm like, oh, the quilt room sounds warm. I'll have like a quilt to wrap them. Yeah, nothing. Anyway, real issues.
Let's, you know, with union density falling down, this is what happens. Unions can't even provide their own quilt. You've enjoyed the conference generally though, like any like big highlights?
I mean I think my favorite sessions were the First Nations talk in circle this morning, and it was good to see the party actually set aside like probably solid two hours plus to hear from First Nations MPs but also other members of the Black Greens, and that was really powerful and important. Also really dug the disability pride session. it's a space I think the party can still do a lot more on, and it was cool to see space made for that. And I think, yeah, a really exciting opportunity to think about revolutionary pathways, particularly in the context of post-COVID world or ongoing COVID world, where, you know, we've had this mass disabling event, and what does that mean in terms of disability justice and disability pride, I think is really important.
Yeah, great. Mm. You are a naughty radical.
Thanks.
We were having lunch and you were telling me, so how many times have you been fined or had like a complaint made against you as a Greens councillor?
Like a lot. I think at last count I'd racked up about $20,000 in fines for inappropriate conduct as a councillor. But the mechanism in Queensland, like, they can't actually take the money out of my bank account. It's not like a criminal offence. It's just sort of this councillor disciplinary procedure. And I've had like dozens and dozens of inappropriate conduct complaints and misconduct complaints, mostly for things like saying that the police is a racist institution or naming and shaming landlords who rip off their tenants or like organizing protests and stuff. So I think the lesson though there is that, I mean, they try to censure you, but the benefits of engaging in that kind of radical activism far outweigh the consequences and the negatives. At some point they'll find some excuse to dismiss me, but I've been in for like almost 7 years now and they still haven't got rid of me. So,
hey! Yeah. God damn. I mean, it's pretty wild, right? People don't know outside Queensland. So Brisbane is the city of council is like extremely powerful. It's got 1.2 million people in it, a budget of $3.5 billion.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, it's my huge. God. And it is LNP dominated.
Yeah, so there's 26 seats. Each seat has a single councillor. Each seat has like 35,000 voters. Yep. So my electorate of the Gabba ward on the inner south side is the only Greens council ward, and then the Liberals hold 19 seats and then Labor holds 5, and then there's like one ex-Liberal who's currently an independent. But yeah, it's pretty hostile territory within the establishment, but I think that's made more space to focus on community building and organising and movement building outside of the Chamber of Council as well.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? How do you view your role as a Radical Greens councillor in that kind of environment? Like, what?
You only recruited me to do this session like half an hour ago, just for the record. I have no idea what these questions are. So this is a really tough one. I think that
you don't know what your role is?
No, I think my role. Well,
wait, these are softballs.
Actually, you know what? You know what's really interesting is that like the role of a councillor isn't defined, and I think a lot of even within the Greens, people get elected as councillors and they're like, oh, I guess I'll just do what all the other councillors have been doing, and except try to plant a few more trees or whatever. And it's like, no, this is a site of potential revolutionary organising, but we kind of miss that opportunity. But there is no strict role description for a councillor, so. For me, I try and spend a lot of my like time and office resources and stuff supporting community campaigns and community movements. And that sometimes looks like really direct stuff. Like we have an equipment loan scheme. So like pretty much every rally in Brisbane now is like borrowing a PA system from Jono's office and like doing free printing and all that sort of stuff. But lawnmowers, whippersnippers, all the cool, like the things that a share house needs to not have to pay too much money on that stuff. But then there's like the strategizing and the linking up and being a node in a network of activists. So like anti-poverty networks, trying to organize something in solidarity with like a different crew. And I happen to know both of them. I can play that linking role, which I think is important. And sometimes it's just using the platform of elected office to elevate and legitimize struggles and normalize ideas that might previously have been considered a bit fringe. And I think we've done that in a big way in Brizzy because, to be honest, when I was elected, well, before I was elected, there was sort of this orthodoxy within progressive movements and including within the Greens that if you're too radical or too assertive, oh, that'll put off the voters and people won't like that. I think that actually came from a lot of middle-class people who might consider themselves progressive but aren't actually interested in deep social change themselves. So, but yeah, like being able to prove to the city and to prove to broader progressive political movements that actually we can articulate really bold platforms and people will still vote for us and people will get excited by that. And actually that's a much more powerful pathway to social change than like this small target reformism that too many of us fall into.
So there's a thing going on, right? Like, yes, yes. Ooh. You know, people have talked about things getting hyper-local and this radical municipalism and the Preston model in the UK. Like you've got socialists being elected to councils and really using the levers of those city councils, which can often be extremely powerful to like introduce some radical change. Mm. and to prove that. And then, of course, as the Brisbane example proves, once, you know, you were the start of it in 2016, as you get elected, then you get South Brisbane and then, of course, a little seat called Griffith. Mm. Like, you've built that up and up. Is it a matter of proving what Greens can do in government from the bottom up?
Yeah, like, it definitely has its electoral benefits. And I think for sure, like, when it kept cracking through in the Gabba Ward had a big impact on proving to the rest of the city that they could vote Greens and there was value in that. And, you know, Greens aren't like loony extremists. Like, we are quite competent when we're in office as well. But I think for me, the broader value has been energizing the Brisbane left. And I don't want to overstate the Greens' role in that because it's definitely a collective thing. But there's just a lot of activism going on the streets and a lot of different kinds of cool organizing that we're playing our part in, but we're also supporting and connected to a lot of other movements that are completely autonomous and separate from electoral politics. And that, yeah, there's a certain momentum to that which builds upon itself, and that's really exciting.
Fuck yeah, there is. Can you talk about making it fun? Because, like,
yeah, the impression, let's talk about that.
Like, the vibe I get, again, from, you know, doing the show with Emerald, you know, getting to know Max and Libby and Stephen, but just the general vibe there, listening to Floodcast, another great Greens podcast that everyone should check out. It is fun. People are hanging out with their friends and doing something great and trying to change the world around them.
Totally,
right?
Yeah.
But it is a bit of fun. Now, you know, no shade to meetings.
You can do the disclaimer, yeah.
But it's like, you know, sometimes it feels like doing party shit is an obligation. It's a chore, right? Like, it's not the fun thing you do, right? You got your fun thing, you got to squeeze in party stuff around there or that kind of hard organizing. And I don't want to downplay the fact that it's hard work and I have nothing but love and respect for the people who put that hard work in. But it seems to me the secret sauce in Queensland is like actually making that shit the fun thing that you do as you hang out with your friends.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And I think, unfortunately, that sort of like dour earnestness creeps into our MPs as well. Like, you see, like...
No, which ones?
Oh.
No.
But Jordan's in the audience. He's one of the good ones.
Jordan is the least dour person in the world.
And is also one of the youngest, right? There's something about that. But there's like, yeah, I think, unfortunately... Like, I'm really earnest about politics, but I think we also need to have a sense of humor about it. And like, one of the best ways to attack and critique stupid ideas is like that derisive, hilarious scorn, you know. And I really enjoy, like, even in the council chamber, talking about how ridiculous these neoliberal assumptions are that are thrown around the room. And yeah, I think we do, like, not just comedy though, which you do really fucking well, but
that's what I was searching for. Yes, yeah, thank you. Fucking hell.
You're so funny, Tom.
Thank you. That's all I wanted.
Space for music and art, right? Like, so many of the meetings and events I organize, I try to make space for poets and musicians, or like have some visual art up on the walls, like make room for creative elements to be part of our movement, not just as like tack on or like nice stuff on the fringe, but like actually central to the sorts of organizing we do. And yeah, I think that's really important. I think we need to be able to celebrate culture and not separate art from activism and have a culture of, celebratory, revolutionary joy that's embedded right in the heart of our politics.
Yeah. Yes.
Side note, we do way better parties in Queensland. I was like, and this is no disrespect to whoever organized this conference, but I was like, this is the first national conference after we won a fucking election. And I was like, all right, we're going to be like, mosh until like 3 a.m. in the morning. We're going to be like partying off the hook. And it's like everyone's really cold. And like I went to a bar on the Friday night. I was like, anyone want to come to this bar in Melbourne? Everyone's like, no, I'm going home. I was like, oh, all right. Just
all
me.
The young people. Mic on?
Yeah.
All the young people did their own thing.
Okay,
by the way.
Yeah. That's right. This is my problem. I'm 34. Damn it. Why didn't you invite me to your
party?
Come
down here and call us all squares. You should love it here. This is scarf territory. You're the scarf guy.
Yeah, this is true.
No, that's fair enough. But that's it. I mean, I've heard people talk big, you know, imagine like a Greens music festival. It doesn't have to be Greens branded specifically, but, you know, the World Transformed is this kind of festival that happens on the outside of the Labour conference in the UK. And like, you know, the energy in Navarra Media and stuff like that, there is something really alive there that we can cook into. As we say, you know, you could be involved with politics and still be.
One of my favourite things lately has been talking to mates who run festivals and then getting permission to do like a talk at the festival on revolutionary activism. So like in between the reggae band and like the techno DJ, it's like Jono on stage talking about green politics.
Yeah.
And that's really fun and cool. And it's a space we don't spend enough attention on, I think.
Right. Now, yes.
Can I also add one thing about the art? In the youth space on uni campuses in New South Wales, we commissioned an artist to do our dental and Medicare and not housing. It was one of our other amazing policies. There's too many to remember.
Yeah.
But the amount of people who were like, this is an amazing piece of art and it's a flyer. And then on the back, we just had a few details about what the policy was. People respond well to it.
Big time.
Totally. Now, winning. We like winning. We've heard a lot from Kitty from the Queensland Greens about winning and how good winning is. We all know how good winning feels. Prospects are looking good for winning in 2024 at the city council election. I know it's not all about electoralism, but you were mentioning this before too. I just wanted to give a shout out to that if we can. Can you explain what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. So like, you know, winning one council seat in Brisbane was really cool because it comes with similar resources to a state electorate. So it's like I get a full-time salary, two full-time staff, an office, big budget, all that sort of stuff. It looks like based on the federal election results, we could win at least 5 or 6 Brisbane council wards in the 2024 election and possibly, yeah, I know, it's pretty exciting.
Yes.
We still have optional preferential voting in the Brisbane council, which is why one of the reasons it's so hard to crack through. If they introduce CPV, compulsory preferential voting, which they might, then we're looking at like 8, 9, 10 seats that we could potentially win, which is probably a bit ambitious, but think big, right?
And big.
And all those people now already have a federal Greens representative. So it should be easier to win those seats locally. And that then creates really interesting questions about the radical potential of local government, but also how do Greens councils resist coercive power from higher levels of government? Like what happens when the councillors want to introduce a vacancy levy or like do something radical in terms of active transport and then the state government intervenes over the top.
Right.
And I think we still haven't quite cracked that question here within the Greens in Australia.
But you got a Queensland Labor government at the state level. They're our allies. We're working together and we're all just trying to make the world a more progressive place.
I think we have to be real. Like that's one of maybe the advantages that the Greens have had in Queensland compared to some of the other states. We have to acknowledge is that the Labor Party in Queensland is so shit. It is so like...
Another exclusive.
Like, newsflash, just so pro-coal, so pro-military industrial complex as well. Like, there's just a lot of space between us and them, and so it kind of makes it really easy to differentiate. But
workers' rights shit. Like, Palaszczuk opened up a new there's an Amazon warehouse in Queensland. I remember that happened during a pandemic, and it's like you could not find a company that is worse for workers' rights than fucking Amazon. Now I'm on a show at Amazon Prime next year. That's like a whole different thing. Their TV production is fantastic, and I love them. I love you, Jeff. But you know, God, I'm an asshole. But I just those basic. I mean, like the ABC Compass vote thing says, they're a center right party now.
Yeah, and I guess this is the problem for us is that like we have these grand ideals, we get some people elected, they still find out they don't have a lot of power, and it's like then what do we do? What do our elected reps, whether it's council or state or federal, do? When we've raised expectations and gotten people really excited about change and talked about system change, and then we go into council or parliament and we move some motions that get voted down and we launch a petition that gets ignored, and it can be quite disempowering for all these people who spent so much time and energy getting these people elected. So I tend to orient towards civil disobedience and direct activism, and that's one pathway. And I think as a party, we need to do a lot more of that. This week,
Yes.
So my schedule this week looks like a couple of days in council budget estimates and like a meeting with some residents who are concerned about light pollution from the nearby skate park and that sort of stuff. And then on Friday with Michael Berkman's office, we're organising a blockade of a public housing tenant who's a disability pensioner is getting evicted from his house because it was too messy, according to the Department of Housing. Mm-hmm. And whereas some MPs would just be like, well, that's unacceptable. I'm going to write a letter to the minister. Like we've done all that. And if it doesn't work, we're just going to link arms and stop the police from enacting that warrant. So we know they're coming at 10 a.m. We're going to rock up at 9 with numbers and see what happens. And then on Saturday... and then on Saturday, we're backing that up because a developer's been approved by Brisbane City Council to demolish like 14 really affordable units on the cheap side of Highgate Hill and replace them with like 7 luxury apartments. So... kind of the worst example of gentrification where you get a bigger building with fewer homes in it. And so Amy McMahon and I have written to the local construction, the cement company, and said, look, council's approved this, developers are going ahead with it, but we want you as the cement company that's based in this part of the city to refuse to work on this thing. They haven't responded yet. So we're going to blockade the cement factory on a Saturday morning, which is prime cement delivery time for all the big developments in the area. So we're going to do a little sit in on the road and hold up the like hundreds of cement trucks. And yeah, big time.
And what, if you get arrested for that, if you get charged, you could like, could that be a way that the council would censure you and kick you out or whatever?
Yeah, maybe, but there'll be someone else to fill my role. And I think we need to be pragmatic about the fact that while our elected reps are amazing people, there's thousands more amazing people waiting in the wings. Yes. And we shouldn't be too precious about this stuff. I mean, I hope I don't get arrested. I'm going to be strategic about it and not go in there with the intention of ending up in the watch house.
Yes.
But like, if it happens, it's not the end of the world for me because I have enough privilege to be able to manage that situation. Mm. And I'm not one of those people who are like, oh, getting arrested is the be all and end all, because it's not. And we got to stop overvalorizing certain forms of activism. But we do have to, particularly as elected reps, I think, be willing to engage in forms of civil disobedience, because we're saying to people, elect us and we'll make change. And if we exhaust the two or three narrow options that the system presents us with, we have to be willing to consider alternatives. Some other time we should chat about the book How to Blow Up a Pipeline by Andreas Malm, which is a whole nother scope of conversation.
Another one, right. Yeah. I love that idea of you getting arrested, someone else. We're like a hydra. You cut us down,
yeah.
And new Greens will take its place. All right, we're heading towards the end. This has been fantastic. If people want to wrap up the conference and go get drunk, that's good. I was just keen to get your thoughts on some, like, looking forward, like, we're in this amazing position now, how things are going to play out on just three particular issues. First of all, I think we should celebrate good news. The Nadasalingham's Bilawila family are home. Yay. And I think that is great. A beautiful story. I'm interested in your thoughts. How do we both celebrate that, give credit where it's due, recognize that as a good thing and like encourage more of it, while at the same time making the broader analysis that Labor's policy is still shit, and if these people arrived by boat today, they would be treated exactly the same way. And we have to broaden our nation's compassion or desire for rights outside of people who are particularly heartwarming or cute, right? There is an element in some refugee rights cases in which, you know, sympathetic cases are presented.
Big time.
But, you know, young men in their 20s who are of colour aren't a threat either and deserve human rights and deserve freedom just as much as the Bilawila family. Mm, exactly. How do we do that as a party?
Yeah, I mean, big question. I think 100% we should be celebrating, but also plenty of other people are already celebrating it, like this is the end of the refugee rights struggle or whatever. Right. And so we have an important job to be broadening that conversation and saying, yes, that's good, but look at all this other stuff. I think now is a really good time for that kind of movement building. I think pushing Labor, particularly on refugee rights, is worthwhile right now. And I'm worried actually that the right, in particularly under Dutton, will be sort of looking for tools to win back some support, and they'll latch onto xenophobia. They're already starting to do that a little bit. So yeah, we have to be proactive about that and in terms of anti-racism and refugee rights, getting on the front foot and building out those struggles now before Dutton starts fear-mongering about boat people again. Mm-hmm. And I think there's space to do that. And what's really exciting to me and what maybe has changed in the last few years is that there are more young organizers of refugee background and experience themselves who we should be platforming in those struggles. And this is a really important thing for white Greens to be mindful of, is that we can elevate and be good allies without having to center ourselves at the rally or in the organizing meeting, and finding ways to empower refugee communities to speak up and to be led by them and what they want in terms of those struggles, rather than, like, my dad was a refugee, but it's not my place to say, here's how we organize a refugee rights movement. It's to say to refugee communities and people who are on those bridging visas and on those like community detention orders, etc., how do you want us to support you, and being led by them?
Yeah, well said, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I said one thing I got into lockdown because I had time to read was prison abolition, and I think we should have an abolitionist mindset to refugees. Like, we need to prevent the need
to refugee detention, not to refugee detention.
To the reason they are asylum seekers and seeking safety from violence.
Yes.
It is our imperialist foreign policy that has never been independent. Jordan ran, Jenny as well, just behind Jordan, and a few others ran beforehand. We still have a bit of work to do in that space in foreign policy and having a proper anti-imperialist, anti-colonial foreign policy. But then, yeah, like, in the camps, like, we know the Labor set it up just as much as the Libs are responsible for it. Labor celebrating the return of the Bilawila family is just the white savior complex.
Yeah. All right. Very well said. Very quickly, let's solve the housing crisis. No, housing was obviously a massive issue. It is, you know, crucial, fundamental to living a decent life, of course. We know how fucked up it is in this country. do we have much hope? Do we see either Labor being able to, you know, introducing the policy they took the election? How can Greens make that better? How can we seriously make a difference in renters and first home owners and people's lives? On that
respect? The crisis is Biden, right? I think it could get worse as interest rates rise and people start defaulting on mortgages, etc. There's a political moment that we have to be ready for. My office is oriented a lot towards eviction resistance because we see that as the gap in the landscape. There's lots of people advocating for more public housing spending and different groups advocating for stronger renters' rights, but we do need more of that pointy end activism. And if you can stop landlords evicting people, the whole system starts to crumble a little bit. I think it'll be really interesting when banks start repossessing homes and people who own homes start getting kicked out as well. And there'll be opportunities to build solidarity there with I guess people who've got different experiences of housing precarity. So that interests me, but definitely we've got to double down on that stuff. It's a really big issue. It's certainly one that politicizes a lot of people. And I mean, gentrification, that was one of the reasons I got interested in local government as well. Like, I'd been a greenie for a long time, but it was that physical experience of seeing my rents rise and all my friends getting evicted that forced me to step up to that next level. And I think a lot of people are going on that journey. So we need to be ready for them and to have pathways to support them. And I think that will look like different things in different places. But again, being willing to squat, being really willing to at least protest evictions. Maybe we don't have to get arrested, but every time the police are enforcing an eviction warrant, we should have people there to at least make visible that problem, to draw attention to it, and to show renters and people experiencing housing precarity that they're not alone in that struggle. Mm. And I think building that sense of solidarity takes a long time because we've been so atomized as individuals. And it's been a long time since there were really strong housing justice movements in this country, but we have to build that up and link that in with other struggles. And I'm excited about that potential, but it's not going to happen by itself. We've got to get organized.
You just want to get arrested again.
I've actually only been arrested once and I didn't mean to. It was at the Kangaroo Point refugee protest. Everyone's like, oh, John, I got arrested again. I was like, no, actually, like, half the elected Greens MPs had been arrested way more often than me. I was the good kid, but anyway.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, like, we do need a housing movement. We need to understand that houses look different to everyone. Some people might not want to own a home. I would be, like, personally, a long-term rental of the renting not going up or the rent price not going up would be amazing.
Mm. Be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like, the urban sprawl is not sustainable, so that would need to be addressed. But with the housing movement, with the left and just politics in general dying out over the last few decades, we've also forgotten to look back at previous movements that did have good housing movements where they talked about stuff like Jono mentioned, like squatting and preventing evictions. But what if we just went, fuck, let's build a house because we've got workers on our side who can know how to build a house?
Yeah. What if we organize the building that we live in, like as tenants or as even as, you know, homeowners within a building? Like, collective action in that respect is doing the rental. Rahu, the Rental and Housing Union in Victoria, does great work on that stuff too. All right, I'm sorry, we're really close on time. Forgive me, Elizabeth. I'm just going to come to Jono on this last point. But we were talking again previously about your ideas about, now that we have this power, particularly in the Senate, how are we going to wield it, particularly when it comes to something, you know, massive and fundamental as a climate crisis and our commitment to say no more coal and gas projects. How do you see that playing out over the next term of parliament?
Yeah, I think a lot of people on sort of the left or the Green Progressives or whatever were certainly burnt by the fallout from like the whole EFT and 2009 emissions trading scheme stuff.
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah. but we shouldn't allow that to cloud our strategic analysis. And, you know, the Greens took a principled position and held out for something better and got it in under Gillard. And similarly now, I think it's important that we hold to our principles as much as possible, extract concessions where we can, but also recognize that, as talked about earlier, major party support is in structural decline. People are sick of the major parties. So we don't lose much by distancing ourselves from them. And if that means saying to the Labor Party, like in the Senate, we're not going to support your budget because of the stage three tax cuts and all the other failures, let them align with the Liberals so that Liberal and Labor pass that budget, and when we're on the outside as the genuine opposition saying that was shit, rather than compromising and allowing ourselves to fall into that trap of reformism where we might extract a few minor concessions that can easily be wound back a couple of years later. And I think taking that strategic mindset to every level of government and how we, like, we can get outcomes and advocate, but we get better outcomes when we set the goalposts right out here and force them to come halfway to us rather than trying to meet them halfway, and then we only get 10% of what we really want.
Because Labor's the example, right? Like Labor says this thing is bad, then they end up voting for it.
Exactly.
Then at the next election, they've got to defend it somehow, and you get into a position where you're passing tax cuts for rich people during an inequality crisis.
Yeah, you're like, what the hell? What are you doing? And it is a failure of political strategy and a sense of people being disciplined by the political establishment. And I can't stress enough how now that we've gotten more elected reps elected, we need to make sure we support them to remain true to their radical roots rather than being co-opted by the machinery of Parliament.
Yeah. Well said. A great point to finish on. Give it up for John O'Shree and Elizabeth Thompson. Thank you for listening to Serious Danger, everybody. We love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Serious Danger, Australia.